Oh, they were upbeat, Jeff Merrick. They were excited, and they were upbeat, and they were happy times. The New York Hockey Rangers, of course, as they face potential elimination. Alain Vigneault had jokes. He was ready to do the speech from the Netflix coach commercial during
his
press conference today. Yeah, he was. Everybody was feeling good, feeling happy, talking about making the impossible possible and doing this whole thing and whatever and blah, 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 flee, flee. Can they actually do it tonight? Can they actually extend this series by a game?
I was going to say, it's hockey, it's sports, so anything can happen. But really, I've been sort of noodling this around in my head, going back to game three. I don't know that I can see a way the Rangers can win. Like, I really don't. And more so, I don't see anyone in that room that can or has prepared this team to win. Like, there's no Mark Messier in that room. There's no Steve Yzerman in that room. There's none of those guys in that room that's prepared this team for this moment. You know, like, there's always those crossroad moments for every single squad. And it's usually at that point that, you know, like your quote-unquote leader has prepared you for this moment. I don't see that in the Ranger room. Like, I really don't. And the fact that here we are in a game four where the Eastern Conference representative could get swept, I kind of say to myself, this wasn't supposed to happen. This isn't supposed to happen in a salary cap league where parity is the call of the day. How have we gotten to a point where the Western Conference, and we've been saying this for a few years now, the Western Conference is so obviously, like, head and shoulders more dominant than the Eastern Conference? How did it get this way? What happened that we're at the point now where it doesn't really matter? I guess maybe the Boston Bruins would have given the Los Angeles Kings a run, but how did we get to the point where no matter who comes out of the West, they are going to dominate, period?
Well, let's think about that for a second. I like that idea. Let's noodle this through.
All right.
All right, so in you had the Detroit Red Wings for many, many years as the pace setter, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's a good pace setter to have. That's a fast running horse. You got to load up in order to catch him, right? So yeah. I think that's one of the reasons why the West is so strong, is to match Detroit, to match this juggernaut, to match what was year after year the team that would be challenging or winning the President's trophy and challenging and winning the conference title and Stanley Cups. Teams had to really load up, right?
But it's not as if teams in the Eastern Conference were just kicking back and putting their feet up on the desk and not trying to get, you know, work done and not trying to improve their squads. This is, after all, the conference that has what many consider to be the best player in the world in it, in Sidney Crosby. And, oh, yeah, there's an Ovechkin guy as well. I'm just curious. Like, I don't even know how to approach the answer. I just don't know how we got to the spot where, you know, we're talking about, you know, dynasties in a salary cap era, and there's really just two teams. Mind you, have you seen how quickly I blew off that question about do the Rangers have any chance? By the way, it quickly transitioned. But like, how do we get to this place here where it's so obvious that, you know, in a whatever a salary cap dynasty can be, we have it, and it's two teams in the Western Conference. It's Los Angeles and it's Chicago.
Well, I guess you start with the architects of those teams, right? I mean, you start with Dean Lombardi. You start with
Dale Talon
in San Jose. Dale Talon into Stan Bowman. You go Kenny Holland when the Wings were in the Western Conference. I guess Bob Murray should be in that conversation somewhere, right? I guess maybe. I don't know.
Hey, you know what? You know what?
We talked to some of those guys.
We talked about the LA model on yesterday's podcast. So yesterday at Hockey Central, John Shannon did something really interesting. He went back to when Dean Lombardi took over the Los Angeles
Kings. He started dating an LA model.
Very interesting. Yes, as a matter of fact. Yes, that's right. Yeah. He's now dating Pauline Gretzky. He went back and traced how many trades Dean Lombardi has made since taking over. Now, Dean Lombardi didn't draft Anze Kopitar, so that wasn't his. But pretty much everything you see on this team is pretty much all Dean Lombardi. And we talk a lot about, you know, Jonathan Quick. We'll talk a lot about Drew Doughty. We'll talk a lot about the players that were drafted and developed in that Los Angeles Kings system. But he, because I was stunned at the answer, and I guessed way under. Okay, let me ask you the same question. So Shannon comes in yesterday and says, Jeff, and I'm sitting down, Jeff, how many trades do you think Dean Lombardi has made since he took over the Los Angeles Kings? And I say to myself, okay, let's go back. 2006. Oh, how really active have the Los Angeles Kings been? And I give out my number. And then Brad May gives out his number. What's your number? How many trades do you think he's made?
Okay. 2006. Yep. All right, to 2014. So we're talking 8 years.
Yep.
I'm going to go at least 2 trades a year through those 8 years. So I'll bump it up and say 18.
I think the number was 62. I have to go back and look at it. But he really has been. Oh, I said 15. And then you really think, I'm like, okay, well, you know, I look at the composition of this Los Angeles Kings team. I'm like, hey, that guy was a trade and that guy was a trade. Maybe they haven't really been, you know, because you don't. You know, it's funny. You know, there's an old saying from C.S. Lewis. Isn't it funny how day by day nothing changes, but when you look back, everything is different? And that's kind of the spot that I found myself in yesterday when Shannon gave out that number. I think it's 62. I should check with John. It might even be as high as 67. But I'll check with him again when I get to HC tonight. You look at how the team has been put together, and here's a guy that's been a really active general manager trying to put this together. His first trade, by the way, do you remember it? Actually, it was with Minnesota. It was Pavel Dimitra in exchange for Patrick O'Sullivan and a first-round pick. That first-round pick turned out to be Trevor Lewis. So they year by year, this guy's done a lot to improve his team by way of trade. Because we're quick to, and I was making fun of the Flyers yesterday or the day before, but man, wouldn't hate to be a Philadelphia Flyers fan and see all these, you know, ex-Flyers succeeding on, you know, not just the Los Angeles Kings, but then there's Patrick Sharp with the Chicago Blackhawks, and you look at what you got in return. With all due respect to those players, it's not even close. Like, the trade scale is so severely tipped in the favor of whomever Paul Holmgren or Bobby Clark is trading with that it's not even funny. But he really has been an active general manager putting this team together. I know there is that feeling that you need to, you know, draft well and develop and have that idea of patience. And he has been patient, right? He hasn't hit fast forward a lot of times on this team. And now the time to win is now. And he just makes the right choices. Vanek, no thank you. Gabrick, yes. Right this way, sir. But he has been a really active guy trying to put this team together. Because we talked about the LA model and how it's, you know, draft and develop and be patient and don't get forced into making decisions you don't want to make. Man, was I shocked when I heard that number yesterday. That it's been that many trades for Dean Lombardi. It's crazy. Yeah.
It is crazy. But again, we go back to the idea that this guy just was a very shrewd operator insofar as knowing when to deal the assets that he had. And he did. And it's, again, go back to your original point here about the Western Conference. And there's something to be said for just good management and keeping teams together. But, I mean, also a little bit of luck in the draft. I mean, you know, the idea that that Kane and Taves are the heart and soul of the Blackhawks, and, you know, the L.A. team has this trinity of Kopitar and Doughty and Quick. You know, it's an interesting thought about why the West is so much better. But I think going back to my original point about the Red Wings, it's not simply just the idea of, well, they're so good and we have to match that. It's also having a stalking horse that makes the entire race run faster. And you look at a team like the Washington Capitals, right, who spent all of their time in the Southeast Division and all of their time never being scared for a millisecond that they were going to miss the playoffs. It was a cakewalk every year. What are they aspiring to? To the Penguins, maybe? Like, Detroit was a hell of a stalking horse in the Western Conference, and I think the fact that you had teams striving to match that, striving to be as good as that team, has really helped make everybody in that conference better. And I think the Pacific Division is also a great example. You know, when the San Jose Sharks are the big dog in the neighborhood, and you're the LA Kings, and you're aspiring to be that, I think it's a good thing to have. We've always had really strong teams in the Western Conference, and I think it's one of the reasons why it kind of was a trickle down to other teams to be better.
So what you're saying is it's the hothouse effect, essentially. You're hothousing teams, right?
I'm trying to figure out if you're going with a weed reference or somewhere else.
No, I'm not. Normally I would be. But no weed reference on that one. I'm just saying, like, this is the hot dose effect.
The Red Wings are driving the car and all the windows were up.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Exactly.
But, you know, it's interesting, too, because when you look at the composition of the team, I'm surprised that Don Cherry hasn't got his Don Cherry on about this yet. But when you look up and down this roster, okay, whether it's Dustin Brown, Jeff Carter, Kyle Clifford, whether it is Tanner Pearson or Mike Richards or Tyler Toffoli or Justin Williams or Drew Doughty, okay, you go up Jake Muzzin, there's another one. If you go up and down this roster with those players that I just named, what is the common denominator?
What is it?
They all played in the OHL.
Mm.
Like, this is Team Ontario Hockey League. When you look at the Los Angeles Kings, by far, going away, and that's what the OHL has been. Like, people in the Western Hockey League that follow it closely have always said, in a lot of ways, the Western Hockey League isn't successful, you know, in the Memorial Cup a lot of years, even though Edmonton did win it this year, because there are too many teams and they're too spread out, whereas the OHL is more of a hothouse for elite-level hockey players. And this is just one team, but if you look at the composition of the Los Angeles Kings, by and large, these are all guys that played in that hothouse league that is the Ontario Hockey League.
There you go.
And I'm surprised that Grapes hasn't got his Don Cherry on about that yet. But tonight is another night, and don't be surprised if Grapes blasts off about the OHL tonight.
You have to understand that he's still trying to wrap his brain around the idea that a Slovenian could win the Conn Smythe for the Stanley Cup champions.
Do you think he wins it? No. Listen.
You still think
you like Williams, but you think his team down.
I really like Williams. I love the story of Williams. I love honoring the guy who is Mr. Game 7 and a guy who has had a hand in many, many big moments during this run. Like I said, it's all about how you view what the MVP should be, okay? And I view him to be a guy that has to have the numbers. It can't simply just be a guy who has 5 game-winning goals. You have to have consistent numbers throughout the playoffs, and Williams does. But you also have to have big moments you can point back to and be like, yes, there is the heroism that we are rewarding with this prize. I don't think Doughty has it necessarily in the same way that Williams does. And I know that Kopitar's numbers are commiserate to what Williams has put up in game 6s and 7s, that I think Williams has a slight advantage over him, maybe like 1 or 2 points. But Williams has just done bigger and better things in these playoffs. I think that needs to be rewarded, and I would love to see him win the Conn Smythe.
Yeah, and there are 3 legitimate guys I think you can choose from. We talked about it yesterday. Kopitar, Williams, and Doughty. That's really about it. If he had a more, we'll see what happens tonight. But do you think Jeff Carter ever gets into the conversation?
He could based on, you see, I just think that he's right now behind 2 guys for it. I don't think you could make an argument for Carter over Williams. And if you can't do that, and you can't make the argument for Carter over Doughty, over Kopitar. Mm-hmm.
Oh, by the way, Section 328 sends in, looks like 65 trades for Dean Lombardi in Los Angeles. Okay, so there's a number. But it's in the 60s, going back to 2006.
All?
Is that all? I know. Patrick M., the Kings have a huge hashtag gob factor. Good Ontario boy. Gob factor. That's funny. Oh, good Ontario boy.
They don't have nearly enough gob on this team. They don't have enough gob. Listen, we've been filleting the Western Conference enough here. Let's get back to the East for a second. Can the Rangers win game 4? Can the Rangers win game 4?
I can't.
But I'll tell you.
Sure,
exactly.
Why not? It's hockey, but I can't see it.
No.
Tell me why.
There's one reason why. And it kind of depressed me because I have to be honest with you. I'll be fully honest with you. I love L.A. I love my friends in L.A. I love seeing them. Love the beach. It's beautiful out there. I eat all sorts of gourmet burgers. Yeah. I drink a lot of great beer. Mm-hmm. LA is wonderful.
Hang on. Let me ask you. Do you do anything healthy in Los Angeles while you're there? Because that's like all I would do. Like, to me, it's like hippie heaven. My little organic life. That would be heaven for me. Like, I'd be like, oh man, you have kombucha on tap? What?
I hit the gym once when I was in LA. And it was
What's his name, Jim?
You bastard.
Sorry.
And by the way, that's an L.A. stereotype, okay? They're not all
sorry.
Gay.
Just okay,
just like 95% of them.
Okay.
I hit the gym the day of game 2, yeah. And it was really – I don't know who designed this thing in the place. I was staying at the Westin by the airport. I don't know who designed this thing, but I'd like to give a hearty double flip bird, a double FU to these guys. Because here's my fat ass struggling on the elliptical, okay, listening to Doug Love's movies and getting my zone, and things are jiggling that shouldn't be jiggling. But I'm trying to get healthy. And where do they put the elliptical trainers? Where do you think they put them? I'll tell you where they put them. Behind a giant glass window that is a few steps away from a glorious swimming pool where shapely women are sunning themselves. And can I just tell you right now, this was not a two-way mirror, okay?
Oh,
this was a clear pane
hilarious.
Of glass where I am sweating through an old novelty T-shirt, and L.A. women are looking over and seeing this, and A, probably thinking I'm leering at them, even though there's no other place to go, and B, just saying, thank God I look like this.
Do you feel like pervy guy when you're in that situation? And I'll tell you why, because sometimes when I go to yoga class, I'm the only guy in the class, and I feel like a perv. Unless Claire's with me, and in some ways she's just like my I'm not a perv prop. Like, Claire, can you come to yoga with me? Because it's normally one of those days where it's no guys that show up. Like, usually, like, the Friday noon class that I'll go to will be like, no dudes. It'll just be me. Mm-hmm. And you really have to make sure that you look straight ahead at all times and don't look sideways in the mirror or right beside you.
And
I feel like the pervy guy.
And the real issue for me in this situation is that I understand what they're trying to do, what the Westin's trying to do. They're trying to set it up so that's a carrot in front of you to say, look, you can aspire to be at poolside and feel as good as these beautiful people do. But the opposite occurs, Merrick. The opposite occurs. I look at that pool, I'm on the elliptical, all I can think of is putting a giant thing of fries with Old Bay powder on top of my belly and putting four or five beers in a bucket next to me. And, like, listening to you know, the White Stripes on a beautiful sunny day in Los Angeles.
That sounds nice. I like that. I know. Tours. I just listened to before the show today.
It's
nice.
The problem.
It's
had the opposite
sweet.
Effect.
No. Okay, so Rangers, finish it. So why can they win? Why can they
the
win?
The Rangers have one shot at this, and his name is Henrik Lundqvist. And I know that he has been the lesser of the two goalies in this series, but I quote to you for truth these facts.
Okay.
Henrik Lundqvist has a 10-2 record, a 1.32 goals against average, and a 957 save percentage, and two shutouts in his last 12 playoff games with the Rangers facing elimination. And the Rangers have won seven straight home playoff games and facing elimination, and Lundqvist has a 0.98 goals against and a 967 save percentage in those games. When the chips are down, when the Rangers have their backs against the wall, when everything is going wrong, Henrik Lundqvist steps up and saves the day. And as much as I don't want to go back to L.A., and listen, it's not simply about traveling. I have no problem with traveling. I could probably see the end of RoboCop on my way back from L.A. This is a good thing. It's the fact. And here's why I implore you, Ranger fans, even if you're rooting for your team tonight, think about this. Think about the children.
Yeah.
My daughter at her school on Friday, 9 o'clock, has a Donuts with Daddy Day in honor of Father's Day. Okay? Donuts with Daddy. Exactly. So if the New York Rangers win today, if they extend this series longer than it should, they delay the inevitable. Vivian Wyshynski will not have her father there for Donuts with Daddy.
Wow.
Just think about that. Think about that, Rangers fan. When you go out to the arena tonight and you're screaming and yelling for your team to win, think about my daughter. Thinking about the fact that she will have a donut in front of her and an empty plate next to her because Daddy had to go to Los Angeles.
Wow, what a sad Facebook image that is.
I know.
The daughter with the...
I mean, all due respect to Marty San Luis, but this might be the saddest story of the playoffs.
This would be tragedy. I don't know how this. You know what? This is going to earn some therapist an international reputation. Some therapist. This is corner office material. You're going to put Vivian's going to put some therapist on the map because
speaking
of this story.
Speaking of therapy, by the way, I was talking to Mark Lazarus from Chicago Sun-Times. Very good, cool guy. He's been on the show.
Yeah,
before.
Good dude. Yeah.
And we were talking about the fact that I've actually not booked my flight back to LA yet. It got to be so late in the game that I said to myself, if I book the flight, it probably means the Kings will lose. Like that level of karmic paranoia. And so Chris Johnston from Sportsnet kind of gave me some grief and, you know, talked about why how I could possibly think that this affects anything. And I told him, hey, look, man, you know, when I was a kid, I used to think that depending whether or not I drank pink lemonade would dictate the Devils winning or losing a game. And Lazarus came forth with his own superstitions. about whether or not he did a certain thing would affect whether or not the Mets win or lose. So I felt like my paranoia and my stupid karma was completely justified,
well,
and I think Laz and asked him what the name of his therapist was, because I wanted to see if we were going to the same thing.
maybe get a group rate. Our guest is standing by. He is Dave Andrews. He is the president and CEO of the American Hockey League. Series all tied up between Texas and St. John's. It is 1-1. Game 3 is on the horizon. Dave Andrews joins us now. Hello, Dave. How are you, sir?
Hey, guys. Doing great.
Hey, we know about superstitions for players. We know superstitions from journalists, radio people, television people. What about superstitions for league presidents, league commissioners, league CEOs? Is there anything that you do, I don't know, during the playoffs, before the playoffs, regular season, anything that you, because I know you're athletically inclined as well. I know you run marathons.
Like to try to get 7-game series, or what exactly would we be trying to have happen?
Are there any superstitions that you have before the playoffs?
No, but I do enjoy kicking some butt in racquetball most days here mm-hmm. in St. John's with the president of their team. So just back from that victory, and it is almost a tradition here. We've been Glenn Stanford is the president of the team. I've known him for 25 years. We've been in the league at the same time, and so the racquetball series goes back a long way.
Nice.
Hey, can I ask you something really quick about Glenn, because that's a sort of mutual friend that you and I shared. I've going back to the St. John's Maple Leafs days into when he worked with the Hamilton Bulldogs. I've had plenty of time for Glenn Stanford. For those that may not be familiar with how sort of integral he's been to the American Hockey League, can you say a few words about Glenn?
Absolutely. I mean, Glenn brought the original Maple Leafs franchise St. John's back. Gosh, it would be probably 25 years ago, I guess, somewhere in that range. An arena manager here in St. John's and a former teacher and a terrific athlete. But he was the GM and president of the team for a number of years with St. John's Maple Leafs, and then he was in charge of essentially constructing Mile One Stadium here in St. John's while also being the president of the team. And when the Leafs moved to Toronto and the Marlies came into being, Glenn moved out to Boise and ran a building and a hockey team in the ECHL, and then he went to Hamilton. He won a couple of Calder Cups in Hamilton with the Bulldogs as their general manager and president. And then when the opportunity came to move back to Newfoundland with the Winnipeg Jets bringing the St. John's IceCaps back into being, Glenn was not only became the president of the team, but he was the integral part of making it happen. And he and I worked together with Mark Chipman out in Winnipeg and Danny Williams here in St. John's to put together the deal that would bring the AHL back to the city. So he's a legend here. He's actually going into the Newfoundland Hockey Hall of Fame next weekend, and a terrific guy.
Awesome. Hey, so whenever a coach is in the news, as Willie Desjardins is right now for potential coaching positions in the NHL, how much pride do you take in the AHL constantly producing these guys that seem to find NHL jobs every year?
Well, we take a lot of pride. I mean, I don't think we can take a lot of credit for the quality of the coaches that we have in our league, but we're certainly proud of the fact that certainly for the last decade or so, we seem to have been one of the places that a coach needs to spend some time in order to qualify himself to go to the National Hockey League. And we have two excellent coaches here in the final, and Willie Desjardins and Keith McCambridge with St. John's. Funny story, I went into the coach's office before game one in Cedar Park, Texas, and Doug Lidster is the assistant coach there, and it was the day of the morning skate, and Doug had on a T-shirt that said, "Keep calm and listen to Willie."
he's been a sort of a wonderful story going back to the Medicine Hat Tigers and through Dallas, and he's sort of always been considered that next wave of coach as those next sort of American Hockey League guys graduate. Was it and you'd know this a lot better than I do, Dave, was it Bruce Boudreau who sort of kicked open the doors to, hey, we have a gold mine of coaches in the American Hockey League, why are we just recycling guys at the NHL level, why don't we look at Dave Andrews' league?
Well, I think Bruce is, in a way, I think publicly kicked open the door, but if you looked at sort of the track record prior to that, I think even before Bruce went, about 20 of the coaches in the NHL at that time had been coaches in the American Hockey League at some point. But I think Bruce, when he went to Washington from Hershey, You know, there was such a dramatic turnaround with their team, and he had so much success right away that after paying his dues for so long in various leagues, but certainly in the American League in Manchester and in Hershey, I think it was just a very heartwarming story. And everyone in hockey loved Bruce Boudreau long before he got to the National Hockey League, and everyone knew him and respected him. And I think we're so happy for the success that he had there in Washington that I think opened a door that it was kind of a forerunner for a lot of coaches in our league, and brought some attention to the fact that if you could be successful in this league, you probably could be successful at the next level.
All right, let's get to some nuts and bolts about the league that you run, which is obviously an amazing hockey league. The Flames moved from Abbotsford to Glen Falls. Did that city have to prove itself during the Phantoms' time there in order to get another team, or was it always a city that was going to be an AHL city no matter what?
Well, I think really the opportunity for Calgary to move to Glens Falls was the door was certainly opened by the Flyers and the Phantoms affiliate being in there for a period of time. As you know, the Phantoms went in there really as a placeholder between the destruction of the Spectrum in Philadelphia and the completion of a new building in Allentown, Pennsylvania, which will be ready for play this fall. So fans in Glens Falls and in the Adirondack region knew that the team was there for a fixed period of time and would be leaving. But they supported the team. They were, it's a terrific hockey market, as you know, and the Dineen family are based there. Pete Mahovlich has stayed there. A lot of former players that played for the Adirondack Red Wings or coaches have stayed in the area, Glenn Murkowski. It's a really neat little area in upstate New York, and has a good building for our league and good geography in terms of travel for a team. So I think when the Flames realized that Abbotsford was not going to work beyond this year, and they began to look for a place to put their team, it was a very simple idea in terms of finding a place that was good for player development. They're going to have to deal with the distance, obviously, between Calgary and Glens Falls, New York, in terms of player recalls. But for now, certainly, and perhaps into the future, it'll be a good home for them.
And to follow that, you mentioned the distance between the team and its minor league team. Now, obviously, one of the big stories about the AHL that's been kind of talked about now for the better part of 3 years has been the idea of the Western Conference teams in the National Hockey League want their minor league affiliates to become closer to them in proximity. So this Flames move to Glens Falls would seem to fly in the face of that idea, but it's been reported in some places that the major realignment of the AHL, and by that meaning teams literally moving from east cities to west cities, could be something that happens as early as 2015. Is there any update on that? Is it all poppycock? Where are we in that idea?
Well, it's not all poppycock, and it's beyond an idea, but it is still a work in progress, and it's an ongoing process between the league and five of the Western-based NHL teams, potentially perhaps even more than five. But as you can imagine, there are a lot of moving parts to figuring out a way to relocate five teams out to the West Coast. We have essentially agreed with those teams on a framework in which we would see it happen, but there are a number of transactions that have to play out before it's going to happen. So in terms of a time frame, 2015-16 is possible, but a lot has to fall into place before that's going to happen. But there's no question that those Western-based teams really would like to have American League teams in their time zone. It's important for them from a cap management point of view. It's important that they believe from a player development point of view. And I think growing the game out on the West Coast also is important to them, and they believe that having an American League division out there would help to do that. But it's not an easy project, and it's really not a fait accompli as yet. I mean, some of the terms and conditions are sort of in place, but there's a lot more to be done before it becomes a reality. And you know, if we look at what's happened in terms of those West Coast teams over the last 2 years, it's difficult to argue that LA and Anaheim haven't been pretty successful in developing players in the American League where they are. But the fact is that they would like to be closer, and our obligation is to try and work with them to make that happen.
So tonight is game three between Texas and St. John's, and then there is a significant gap. And we go from from the 11th, which is today, to the 16th for Game 4. I'm guessing George Street will certainly be alive. But why the why the extension here, Dave? What's the holdup?
Well, George Street is always alive, Jeff, as you know. But it the holdup is probably going to make George Street more alive in that there is a huge convention here in St. John's, and the arena had been booked 5 years in advance of the convention, I believe. Statist convention. So either they're all going to be asleep, or they're going to be on George Street getting anesthetized. But it kept us out of our arena here for 5 days. And this particular final series, if you look at the dates, it's not pretty. It's been very difficult. We had some blackouts in the arena in Cedar Park, Texas, as well. And obviously with 3,000 miles travel between the teams, which is actually further than Vancouver to Boston, it's been very difficult to move the teams back and forth and to get the dates that we want. So we're very quickly moving through three games, and then we're going to have a layoff here and then back at it Monday and Tuesday of next week, and then back down to Texas for game 6 if we need that, which I would be surprised if we don't.
The AHL has obviously been adopting some of the stadium series vibe from the NHL, which is a good thing. And one of the places that is getting a game next season is a real interesting one, the Carrier Dome in Syracuse. Talk about that.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting. The first outdoor game that was held in the American Hockey League was held in Syracuse, and Howard Dolgan, who's the owner of our team there, was the guy that took on the risk and wanted to hold a special event like that. And it was a spectacular event at the New York State Fairgrounds there in Syracuse. And he's a great promoter and marketer, and he's had this dream of playing in the Carrier Dome, and he's now making it a reality and has negotiated a deal with the university and their athletics department. I think they're going to make it a real celebration of the game. They're going to include a lot of college hockey and women's hockey and high school hockey as part of the celebration of the game there at the Carrier Dome in Syracuse. So I think Howard hasn't failed at anything he's done, so I'm sure it'll be a massive crowd and a real celebration of our sport, and we're looking forward to it.
Being joined by Dave Andrews, he is the president of the American Hockey League tonight in St. John's at Mile One. It is the St. John's Ice Caps facing off against the Texas Stars. I don't know if I've ever asked you this publicly, Dave, but I've always maintained that Dave Andrews is the best general manager the NHL never had. How close were you over your career to actually making the jump and becoming an NHL general manager?
That's a question you would have to ask a couple of guys that interviewed me, I guess. I interviewed two or three times for National League jobs, and I think I was... To be perfectly honest, I think two of them I probably could have had if I was willing to agree to financial terms that weren't quite what I wanted. And the other one I thought I had, and I think a candidate that the team thought was available or thought wasn't available became available just before I was going to get the job. So in any event, I think it's probably the best thing for all three of those teams that they didn't hire me, and it was probably the best thing for me to stay where I am, because I've had a really, really good run here, and it's been a privilege to do this job.
I'm just curious as well, because you had a quick one for Dave, because you had a lot of success certainly with the American Hockey League, and success as well in the Western League with the Victoria Cougars. I'm sure you see Bob McGill around the rink. He was one of your players with the Cougars so many years ago. Do you still keep in touch with guys that you helped coach in junior hockey, whether it was Grant Fuhr, Bob McGill, or whomever?
Yeah, I do, and actually, I was with Bob this morning. He's doing the color on the games for Leafs TV, which is going national in Canada on a number of different carriers tonight. But also Mark Morrison, who was a teammate of Bob's in Victoria when I was the assistant coach here with the St. John's Icecaps, and Mark and I have stayed in touch really ever since he went over to Europe and played after he was drafted by the Rangers. And I stayed in touch with Paul Sear until his untimely death, and a number of our players. Grant, I've stayed in touch with somewhat. Certainly when he was still playing, I saw him a lot. But and a few of the guys that played in Cape Breton when I was there, I still see from time to time. Kirk Maltby, of course, who played in Detroit. Sean Van Allen, I'm in touch with fairly often. And you do run into a lot of guys still that you know, either coached or coached against back in the Western League days, and certainly you know, in the American League as well. Over the years I was with Kit Breton, we you know, you get to meet a lot of people, and it's you know, the game's not that big. You run into people all the time that you can tell old stories with, and you got to be careful in the lies you tell, because guys were actually there.
Hey, that's a great thing about these events. You get together and swap stories, and some of them are actually true. Sorry, go ahead, Greg.
That's right. No, I was going to say exactly. Dave, last one for me, sir. Okay, AHL, ECHL, every minor league is on the table. What is your favorite team nickname in minor league hockey? Now or in the past?
You know, you're one of those glass half full guys. Like I'm a glass half empty guy, and there are a lot that I didn't like very much. Like, I can't think of
What's one you didn't like?
Well, when we found out that we had a team called the Albany River Rats, I wasn't really excited about that. Then when we and then also even city names. We had a team called the Capital District Islanders, which, yep. You know, when you've got a league with 30 teams, it's hard to explain to teams and, you know, to fans in other cities who Capital District is. Like, it's a Capital District to them, but not to anybody else. But we couldn't convince the owner at the time that the team ought to be called Albany. So we actually, two of our favorite team names were in the Albany region.
I give you credit, sir, because I'm happy that you didn't choose my favorite AHL name of all time, which, of course, was the late, great Iowa Chops. I would have been heartbroken had that been your least favorite name for an AHL team.
It's in the ring, though.
And last one from this microphone, and Dave, we wish the American Hockey League continued success, and hopefully for the AHL's sake, a good 7-game series, and that everyone behaves in this 4-day layoff between games 3 and 4. I don't know if I've mentioned this on the air before, but Dave is an athlete. Dave is a runner. Dave does half marathons consistently, and we're still trying to get together to actually run one of these together. We came close last year, Dave, didn't we? Are you going to do the waterfront marathon this year?
We did, and I am going to start training as soon as the Calder Cup finals are over, and I'm hoping to run Toronto. I came up short last year and actually had to run my own half on the same day as Toronto because I couldn't get there. But I plan to get there this year and hopefully run it with my daughter. And if you're there, we'll just chase you around, Jeff.
Oh, please. I'm the guy who's going so slow, he's almost going backwards. I look forward to seeing you there with your daughter, Dave. We'll talk soon.
You bet. Thanks for having me on.
Dave Andrews is the president and CEO of the American Hockey League. I didn't know that. Well, River Rats, eh? That one kind of surprised me.
Well, if you think about
it. I'm a fan of the River Rats.
I know.
Trust me. I know. I get it. But I'd never thought about it in that way until Dave mentioned it. That, oh, yeah, I guess that is a little bit questionable.
Whenever they bring you that mock-up for that team name, your first thought is, what is going to happen when the Teamsters strike? We have to deal with being the Rats.
The Rats. Oh, it's hilarious.
That's a great answer.
So there you go. Game 3 tonight between St. John's. Yeah, I never would have thought that
one. One thing I forgot to ask him is that the AHL is usually the incubator for NHL rules changes. I wonder if there are any coming down the pike that they're going to test.
Yeah, we
AHL.
Talked about last time we had him on. He said nothing pending.
Yeah,
I can text him if you like. Follow up.
You know, we actually didn't talk about a couple of the little tweaks that the competition committee discussed. We talked about the ice scrape. And the changing size in overtime. We talked about the goal interference, the coach challenge. We didn't talk about the going to the Olympic distance hash marks for offensive zone faceoffs, where they're going to now be 5 feet apart. And it's to try to decrease the number of scrums between players off the draw and increase the amount of creativity for forwards. Do you think it's going to do anything?
Marginally. I really think that if you want to get... And we
change.
Saw... No, it's not a big change. It's a little bit of a tweak, and that's all that it is. If you want profound change, I'm glad Harrison Mooney tweeted this out during game. I think it was game 3. Harrison tweeted this out. You know, we need to find a way to get rid of wingers, taken phony draws just to get thrown out so they can buy their team a little bit of time to rest.
Uh-huh.
Amen to that one, right? God bless Harrison for sending that tweet out, because it's true. It's 100%. We've seen players go in the draw just deliberately to get kicked out, go in there, cheat, and advise their guys a couple of extra seconds to rest. Plus, you know, when the real face-off guy comes in to take the draw, you're going to get a clean draw, because linesmen are, let's just say, encouraged when the second player comes in to take the draw to just drop the puck. Like, you can count on one hand how many times that call is made, because the way it works right now, guys, if you're not aware, one player can get kicked out of the faceoff circle, but if a second player from the same team gets kicked out, it is a minor penalty. And you can count on one hand the amount of times that is called. They are strongly encouraged just to drop the puck. And I've maintained now for a while, we've discussed it on this podcast, go back into history. If you want to get rid of all the nonsense at the draw, guys jostling for position, guys getting thrown out, and you hear Don Cherry in the intermission say, yes, drop the damn puck. If you want to get rid of that, go back to the way hockey was when it started with faceoffs. The puck starts on the ice. That's where it begins. The referee has a whistle. When he blows the whistle, then you begin the faceoff. There is no more throwing guys out. There's no more, you know, waiting, anticipating the draw. And I know it's a skill you're getting rid of if you go to the system, but if you're that strong on wanting to just do a fair draw, start with the puck already on the ice. Don't worry about the drop. Get rid of it.
Yeah, that's why I miss the Shanahan research and development
summits,
team.
Yeah.
Because they were trying all sorts of variations on face-offs. I hope they do, because it was fun to see all that stuff. It was fun to see 3-on-3 overtime. It was fun to see them attempt to do that goofy bear hug thing that Brian Burke thinks is going to save hockey. You know, all that stuff.
Save some players.
Fun to watch.
Save some players. But yeah. I know you're not a fan of that one, but I'm a little warmer.
Well, you know why. But I have a very good reason why. I'm incredibly uncomfortable about touching. No. I am wary of there being no way to delineate between a bear hug in the corner and a holding penalty. Because guys will hold on for too long. And they'll be like, well, I'm just following the letter of the law.
Well, they said I could bear hug him. I don't know. One steamboat,
hey,
two steamboats.
Brian
I
said
I
could.
I don't know what it is.
Yeah, Brian said I could bear hug him.
I didn't say you can hold him. I said bear hug him. There's a difference.
I know. Well, it's like the difference between embellishment and diving. Anything that makes this game harder to call, I'm not in favor of. So on that, I will see your point. Because the game's already too hard to call as it is. Jeez.
See?
It's too tough. What about some of the other... of course. Hey, what are some of the other issues coming out of competition committee that turned your head? Anything? I mean, the hash marks were one thing. The double IHF size, I suppose.
No, the thing you just mentioned, the delay of game penalty for players that intentionally get thrown out of the faceoff circle after icing calls that they're doing, that's a great rule change.
How do you do that?
What do you mean?
Like, you're allowed to take a draw. Well, hell, a defenseman can go and take a draw.
If you get kicked out, then you're going to get a penalty. That's the rule. That's the rule they're talking about. They're saying only after icing calls. Yeah, only after icing calls. Oh. I have no problem with that, because essentially an icing penalty is a penalty anyway, right? So, like, anything that further takes away your rights as a defending team if you ice the puck is fine by me in that situation. I don't care. They should have to play with four people after an icing call. That's right, I said it. No, I don't believe that at all. Stupid idea.
All right.
You know, one of the things that I've thinking back to that research and development camp, one of the things I wish they would have tried, because I am a believer that you can further penalize teams. Like, I am a proponent for the 2-minute major, for example. I love that idea. I am a proponent for making it harder to kill a penalty, because essentially, like, you know, if this is a league that wants there to be more goals, because more goals are going to entice casual fans to watch it, that's fine. Just make it easier to score on the power play. That's the easiest time to score goals. If you want 5-4 games, you know, let's do it that way.
But then I come back to the question. But then I always come back to the question that I ask you when we get to this part of the conversation is, how much 5-on-5 play do you want to have in a 60-minute game? Give me the number.
Yeah, I know that. I get that. And I know that there are going to be some games that are just going to be constant power plays. And that's
is
a
that
problem.
Hockey?
I would agree with that. But here's the thing. I would rather
Why do you have the neutral zone if you're just going to have power play after power play?
I would
just get rid of the neutral zone altogether.
I would rather them F around with the rules on the penalty kill than I would see them dramatically change anything 5-on-5 to try to make scoring better. Like, you know what? Like, if the debate is let's make the nets bigger versus let's make it harder for teams to kill penalties, I'm always going to opt for option two, aren't you?
Yes. Oh God, I don't want the nets bigger, and I specifically don't want the nets high. I don't want the nets higher. Is a big one. That one's always been out there. Well, the goaltenders are all going down. Let's make the nets higher. Okay, great. Let's encourage players to shoot even higher now from the point. You want to see someone die in the NHL? And it could be from a fight. That's what it's going to be from. Don't make
the
nets higher.
The idea I kind of liked was the one that was tested, I think, in the Shanahan camp, and I wish it could be tested a little bit more. The idea that you can't clear the puck from your own zone. Yeah, as a defending player, you have to gain possession of the puck and skate it out before you can knock it down the ice.
This is on the penalty kill?
Yep. That was one of the things they tested.
Or why don't you just, I've never understood why icing gets negated when you're killing a penalty. Why just make it icing? Why are you helping them that much? Just keep the rules in place. Might change the rule. I've always philosophically had a problem with that one.
Go to you're cruel. You're a cruel commissioner.
You're the one that wants a 2-minute major.
I want these exhausted
hockey players out there.
Well, that's because I believe in getting back to the fundamental roots of this game, sir. Just because the Montreal Canadiens were so damn good, we had to change the way power plays were, doesn't mean that they have to stay that way. This other thing is allowing a team to still ice the puck without any repercussions, but they have to earn it in their own zone. They can't just simply whack the puck willy-nilly out of the zone. They have to skate it out, gain possession of the puck, really battle, make it a proper kill. You, on the other hand, for some reason, want to just not allow them to even have any way to kill a penalty.
So what happens? Okay, so the follow-up question is, what happens if they do ice the puck? What happens if they do shoot the puck down the ice from behind their own blue line? What's the call? Is it just icing? Then just make it just nullify icing to begin with. Well, problem solved.
I guess it would be technically icing because the face-off would then be back in the zone. Yeah.
Right. So just get rid of icing altogether. Oh, now you're coming over to my side, Greg. Now all of a sudden, oh wait a minute, Darth is Luke's father. Okay, well I'm sort of warming up to this guy all of a sudden.
I didn't realize that you were gonna spin me like that, Spinmeister, and change the messaging on your thing to have me come over to your side of the debate.
Hey, Matt Lichtenstatter, our good friend at Matt's Musings One. Going back to the Dave Andrews interview, as we sort of bounce all over the place on the podcast, why no love for the Omaha Axar Ben Knights? Do you know why they're called the Axar Ben Knights?
No.
Because if you spell it backwards, it's Nebraska.
No.
Omaha Axar Ben Knights. Yeah, bud. Did you not know that one? Yeah, the Axar Ben Knights.
No, I didn't know that one. Yep. Phil Ralston writes in, that interview made me want a KHL-AHL crossover championship series more so than NHL-KHL. That's about the quality of hockey.
I would even submit that there's, I'd even put the American League on top of the KHL, to be honest with you. I think the AHL is second best league in the world.
I would agree with that.
Yep.
I'll
put them over the KHL.
JKR Devil, teams can ice the puck on the PK because in competitive situations, they likely will just take the icing anyway.
Well. Yeah, that was to your point about we'll just take the icing. Okay, if we don't get zone, then we can't ice the puck.
Patrick, we'll just ice it and
rest a bit.
Patrick Clark writes in, rather than 2-minute major, what if the penalty still expires but the player sits the full 2 minutes like a 10-minute misconduct? So in other words, you can't come out of the box until there's a whistle. Well, no, because that would then restrict offense. Because how many times do we see a guy come out of the box and then all of a sudden get a breakaway or join a rush?
Get sprung in a breakaway. That's one of the coolest things.
Yep. I love that.
It's one of the great things.
Out of the box comes Cope. Who even knew? It's like, oh my God, it's Al J. Kopitar's music.
Man, so much of this game we take for granted. Like line changes on the fly. It doesn't happen in other sports. It doesn't. It's such a cool feature of hockey. And guys coming out of the box and getting sprung on breakaways is such a cool feel. Like, think about all the sports that we watch, guys. Like all the majors. That is such a unique feature in the NHL. That's why I hate that move where, you know, there's a line change and the opposite team just throws the puck at the bench hoping to catch them on an illegal substitution. Like, yeah. we should be doing more to make sure that that moment where you are allowed to change while the frickin' game is going on, make sure that is a more pronounced element of this sport. I really believe that's that is one of the great moments of this game.
And I also love being at the game. And like we said, you have to be there to see these things develop. But seeing the guy come off the bench while his team is pinching in the zone, and all of a sudden you realize he's uncovered and he's unmarked and he's pretty damn good, and they've made a great change, and here comes the puck, and he shoots and scores.
Best feeling ever. Tom Ginsburg, why not bring back 2 minutes for loafing, which was an actual call. I guess we call it floating now, but there was an actual call called loafing once upon a time in the NHL, folks.
All right, producer Matt, get ready for a twofer, an audio twofer, because it is now time to start the show proper, shall we?
Oh, wow. Really?
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
You know, you can never have, you know, enough tails or tongues or ears or paws or whatever. This is what's called a radio hook. Hey, Jeff's got a question that's going to get you thinking. Stay tuned. Ooh. What is it? We'll find out in a moment.
And Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
I am so looking forward to taking Bailey's cream all over my face.
Oh,
hi, Mom.
My.
What did you say?
Oh,
sorry, I had Jeff Merrick's pickle juice in my mouth.
Debate hockey.
Need to recharge?
I don't care.
Have some of Jeff Merrick's pickle juice.
Well, yesterday was Babcock cream. Today it's Merrick's pickle juice.
Merrick versus Wyshynski.
Stuff really happened.
All right.
On this podcast. And, wow.
Now it's time for a Wednesday favorite.
Oh, caught Maddie. Caught him. That's good. That's good.
Time to look deep into the souls of Jeff Merrick and Greg Wyshynski. Not that deep.
We answer your mail.
PuckDaddyBlog at yahoo.com. On Twitter at Jeff Merrick and at Wyshynski. We're going postal on Merrick versus Wyshynski.
Ray Ballinger writes in, if you're a top center who's in free agency, wouldn't you go to the Predators? Look at the team. Top goalie, top defenseman, new coach that will open things up. The Preds could do something insane, like term and $8 million a year to Stastny. I think what Ray's asking is kind of an interesting question, which is that the Predators currently have two parts of the holy trinity of success in the National Hockey League, which is a top defenseman who can play monster minutes and a top goaltender in Pekka Rene. So how do they get the third part of the trinity, that amazing centerman who can lead the way? And is Stastny that guy? I don't think he is, but maybe somebody does.
I kind of get the impression, though, that Stastny, like, as much as the Avs need Stastny, Stastny needs the Avs. I don't know that, and this is based on nothing other than a gut feeling, but do you feel the same way, Wish, that I just feel that Stastny can be that guy only on the Avs?
Totally. And why would you leave a team where you are set up linemate-wise? You know,
absolutely
set up linemate-wise. Stay there. You're going to end up having a better chance at winning a cup there than most of the teams they're going to be able to afford you. So bring down your financial expectations. Stay where you're kind of wanted now, although not necessarily a year ago. I mean, let's face it. He wasn't exactly high on the charts of we're going to retain this guy, but I think he proved himself this year, and I think it's a good mix for them right now with him there.
Yeah, it's funny because all year long, I've been saying, wow, Paul Stastny's days of making $6 million are probably gone. I'm not saying that anymore after that season. Talk about the right time. Talk about the right time to have the right season.
Yeah, right. Don MKB writes in, hi, Greg and Jeff. I was watching Don Cherry interviewing the top draft prospects during the Game 3 intermission on Monday night, and each prospect was asked what their favorite movie was. Their answers were terrible. Happy Gilmore, Dodgeball, Twice, Zoolander, Lone Survivor, and Step Brothers. By the way, Step Brothers is not a terrible choice. I literally cringed as every prospect answered. If you two were about to be drafted in the NHL when you were 18 years old, what would your favorite movie be at the time? Mine would be The Godfather. Well, mine would have been Star Wars. I mean, I would have just said that. I would probably say, back in the day, it would have been like, oh, man, I would say the Star Wars trilogy. And thank God nothing's ever come after it to taint its legacy. Because the prequels came out, you see.
I was, and I still am to this day, a huge fan of Apocalypse Now, so it might have been Apocalypse Now. I was then and still am a huge fan of Jaws. And what else did I really like back then? I think we all like Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
I love that. I love the idea of you being a draft prospect and telling someone your favorite movie is Apocalypse Now.
Apocalypse Now.
You're going to shave your head and just become a recluse at some point during your time in that locker room.
Heads up on stakes all along the ice.
They never give me any power play time.
I love the smell of Zamboni fumes in the morning.
Rebecca Wilkes, Jeff and Greg, long time, second time. Love the podcast. Please don't disappear for two solid months this summer. Thanks on behalf of your entire listenership. Also a question. I don't think we will either. What are the requirements in terms of playoff games or Stanley Cup final games played in order to have your name on the cup? And do you think this influences Sutter's decision on whether to put Regeer in tonight?
Is it just for the Stanley Cup final, or is it for games in the playoffs? I'm always hazy on this one.
If you appear in a final game, you get your name on the cup. I know that for certain. The other requirements, I think it's...
So the thing is, if you're injured...
Okay. 41 regular season games or one Stanley Cup final game is the thing.
Mm-hmm.
So Regeer's got to have 41 regular season games, right?
Yeah. You want me to check?
Huh. Yeah, so here, I'll check with you. Robin Regeer. Reggie. I hate spelling his name, by the way.
It's a bad one, eh? Jeez. Yeah,
79 games. Yeah, so he'll have his name on the cup regardless. Those are the hard and fast rules about who gets a name in the cup, but teams can petition to get players' names in the cup too. So it's not necessarily if you don't meet the requirements, you're boned. Your team can always ask for an exception to be made. Let's see here. Fred Forsberg. Which hockey reporter is closest to Hunter S. Thompson in style, professionally and unprofessionally? Wow.
Okay, I have partied Hunter H. Thompson style with at least one hockey scribe, and I'm not going to say who it is.
I don't know if this person parties Hunter S. Thompson style, but I think their approach to coverage is rather gonzo. I would say that person is MVSW favorite, although our interview with her was terrible, Katie Baker.
Oh yeah?
She went to Russia, man.
See, I don't know Katie very well. I don't know her personally. I just know her a little bit professionally.
I'm not saying she lives the lifestyle. I'm just saying the journalistic approach. The balls, the daring. Bruce Arthur, by the way, wrote an amazing story on Daryl Sutter yesterday. Really, really good.
Go read that Toronto Star website. It's outstanding.
Yeah, it's
terrific. That is must read.
And then I walked into the press room today and I said, hey, Bruce, just want to let you know that your Daryl Sutter article was okay.
You know what, Wish?
For that guy. Yeah.
Some might say you're closest to Hunter S. Thompson.
Oh, please.
Why, some might.
Because I'm a hedonist.
Well, you do like to enjoy yourself, but you have a rather unique approach to hockey.
I don't know that
it's gonzo. It's more sardonic.
Does that
a sardonic journalist?
Does that make Leahy? Who is Benicio del Toro in *Fear and Loathing*? Who's his buddy? The doctor.
I don't know. I just read. Don't know.
All right. J.C. Letty writes in. I'm sure you have had a chance to view the interview between Kevin Kurz and Doug Wilson. If not, it can be found at csnbayarea.com. I haven't seen it. I believe that Todd McClellan and Doug Wilson sold out Joe Thornton to save their own asses and are now trying to push him out with trade talk. Wilson has all of the area writers in his pocket, so there are no articles asking why the two still have their jobs. I am biased, but would like your opinion. I know Joe wants to stay. He is very loyal to the team and the fans, but not sure how much crap he can take from Doug. What are your thoughts on Joe Thornton and the San Jose Sharks?
Interesting that Thornton said that he'll leave if the fans want him to, which is a very clever thing to say, because fans don't want Joe Thornton out in San Jose.
No.
But it throws the ball right back into their court. But when you heard Doug Wilson talking about, and we saw this in Phoenix for so many years as well, they want players that want to play for the Sharks, not just who wants to live in San Jose. And for so many years, Phoenix was like this. How many hockey players did you hear say, man, I would love to play in Phoenix. I would love to play in Phoenix. It was awesome. But how many guys said, I'd love to play for the Coyotes? Not very many. You know, it's wonderful
Rodic.
Living in Arizona, thank
oh.
you. Mark. Well, there you go.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
Brittle.
Oh, man.
Brittle.
A lot of dust in this room. Yeah,
I don't know what that is. But I think he's getting at that with San Jose. And the feeling is that, I know a couple of people there, that the personalities on top right now, namely Joe Thornton and Patrick Marleau, those personalities are so huge that it doesn't allow for that next wave of leadership to take over in San Jose, your Joe Pavelskis and Logan Couture's, that it's not allowing for that evolution to happen because those personalities are so big. Honestly, I think that what's this person's name who emailed or tweeted in? I think they're bang on the
JC
Letty. I think that they JC Letty I think is bang on the money. In that I think the San Jose Sharks will do their very best to try to not so subtly publicly encourage Joe Thornton to leave San Jose. Yep. I think that's
They'll suffer for it. Hey, look, you know, I understand that the changes need to be made. I understand that a lot of us picked him to win the Cup and we're completely wrong. But maybe, and that was kind of a crazy thought, even with a 3-0 lead, the Kings are better. Maybe the Kings are just better. Is that a crazy idea? That, like, maybe it isn't, like, our big deficiency as a team for the San Jose Sharks, but maybe the Kings are just better than everybody?
Yep.
And they're going to win the Cup?
Yep. Yep.
I think that's why McClellan kept his job. I don't understand how that's how McClellan keeps his job, but Thornton's got to go. Because honestly, he should go. I mean, what coach keeps his job after blowing that?
Well, I guess Claude Julien did.
Yeah, Julien did against the Philadelphia Flyers.
he certainly did. I don't know. All right, listen. Andrew Armstrong has our last going. Well, go ahead. What were you going to say?
I was just going to say, again, the question about Todd McClellan, though, okay, so you fire him. Who's better that you bring in? If you can't convince Lair Robinson to take over, who I think would be outstanding, but he doesn't want to have a nervous breakdown. He doesn't want any part of that head coaching position. Like, unless you can get Larry to take over, keep Todd McClellan, because he scooped up. He's in Vancouver now, if you let go of Todd McClellan.
Yeah, exactly. Andrew Armstrong has our final going postal for today. Right. Do you guys give the Rangers a chance next year? You said before a team needs that tough loss before they can win. Do you think the Rangers make a return trip to the finals in 2015? I'm thinking a lot about this because obviously you start to transition your thoughts about, well, what'll happen to the Rangers in the offseason because it's fast approaching. They have a good young core of players here. You can go a long way with Derek Stepan, Christopher Kreider, and Ryan McDonagh as your base with Henrik Lundqvist. I mean, Nash is a fine player that doesn't seem to be able to score a goddamn goal in the playoffs, but he does fine for the regular season.
We'll see. They've got a good
collection of guys here, and then you start to think to yourself, okay, San Luis is a year older, and what do you do with Brad Richards? But here's the thing about the Rangers this year, and I don't, they're not a fluke, okay? Let's just get that out there. But things broke really well, don't you think? Montreal playing Boston despite not being the lowest seed available to the Bruins, the new playoff format basically boning them, Pittsburgh Penguins being a dysfunctional group, and again, you hate to bring it up, Brooksy, but the Marty San Luis situation was a major kick in the ass at a time that they didn't anticipate one. A lot of things went right for the Rangers this year, and I have a hard time. The Kings could go back to the final next year, and everybody would be like, that is expected. The Rangers go back to the final in 2015, and you're like, I didn't see that coming because things didn't broke really well for them the year previous.
I think what you touched on initially is the right one. The fact that the Montreal Canadiens beat the Boston Bruins, that was the one that shook everything up, and that's why... For every general manager that tells you, we don't just want to sneak into the playoffs, we want to win the Stanley Cup, just get in. Just get it. Just worry about getting in. You know, don't mortgage your future, right? Let's not be stupid about it, but just get in.
But again,
and
it's not to say
crazy stuff.
It's not a fluke. It's not a fluke. They deserve this. They were the best team in the Eastern Conference. But you know, things went good for them. They went pretty well.
Yeah.
Pretty good. Just saying.
Mm-hmm. All right. Hey, you know, we had an yes. email, a tweet rather, from, let me find it here, from Patrick Clark, loafing. I'd like to know more about that call. Man, the NHL was stiff with penalties in like the early days, in like 1917 to 1925. The loafing call, all right, first infraction, how much do you think you sat for?
For loafing?
Yep.
2 minutes?
Five.
What?
Okay. If you got a second loafing call in the game, you sat for?
The full game.
No, 10, but third gets you kicked out of the game. That was the rule.
Now, loafing is what? Loafing is what? Ragging the puck?
It's called, there was a call called loafing offside. Okay, so if you were essentially what we now know as floating. Actually, I got a book coming to me from a guy from the Society for National Hockey Research. Which sort of traces all the rules, actually even going back to before the NHL started. And
it should
probably arrive next week. So I'll get a sharper point on what
that sounds like.
It's
a lot
fascinating
of fun.
Book. It's
arcane rules are the best.
Oh,
yeah.
Right, and arcane positions that used to exist that don't exist anymore. But actually, I'll get you a copy if you want. But yeah, loafing offside, essentially, from my understanding, is what we now call floating. So you're out of position. You don't technically have the puck. You're just in a loafing, what was considered a loafing position. Because don't forget, hockey, when it was first organized. Into the rules that we sort of understand now, first formalized, by the way, at McGill University, it was much more akin to rugby play than anything else, right? Where the puck was skated forward but passed backwards, not unlike in rugby where the players run forward and move the ball backwards. That's closer to what hockey used to be. So when anyone ever tells you that they are a traditionalist and they don't like a new rule coming in, ask them about skating forwards but only passing backwards. Because that's what traditionalists should like, right? Mm-hmm. And a return of the loafing penalty, which just sounds so awesome. Can you imagine the in-house announcer?
Los Angeles Kings penalty to number 12, Marian Gaborik, 5 minutes for loafing.
pretty embarrassing call, isn't it?
Yeah.
Five for loafing. Who leads the league in loafing? Who's your loafing leaders this year, Greg Wyshynski? Who would be the loafing leaders this year?
Like, I don't know. Who would be the leaders?
I don't know, because you don't really see it so much anymore because everyone is, quote-unquote, in the play. You don't see the Pavel Burres who hang out just above the blue line looking for a breakout pass. You don't see it anymore. I guess maybe the last guy we saw that with, although you see it a little bit with Yakupov, maybe Kovalchuk was the last guy.
Yeah, could be. Why'd you have to bring that name up?
Sorry, but I know it's a touchy one.
Thinking a lot about 2012 lately, folks.
Great, ain't gonna lie to you.
Might have been.
Yeah.
And specifically in the context of, I hope the Devils taught the Kings a lesson, which is close out your team when you get a chance.
Yeah,
if you get a chance to sweep them, just sweep their asses. You don't want to fly all the way back.
That's why I keep coming back to trying to figure out, like, how do the Rangers beat the Los Angeles Kings? Like, what exactly is it you're going to capitalize on? Well, it's not, man for man. It's not the blue line. It's not, like, the Rangers just, if they're not scoring on the rush, they're not scoring. They can't score on their power play. Jonathan Quick, even though he has been, quite average getting into this Stanley Cup final, the performance in Game 3 kind of psychologically intimidates you. They're not going to get out-coached, and it's not as if the Los Angeles Kings haven't been there before, nor have they failed to learn a lesson about 2012, which is Greg's point, when you have a chance to close it out, close it out. And it doesn't matter which rink you win it at, because they've won it in Los Angeles before. Just end it.
Lyle Kosas writes in, good coaches are hard to find, and San Jose shouldn't overreact like Washington and Vancouver did, plus Thornton shouldn't be traded. There you go. Dan Saracini, if loafing is still a penalty, would Thomas Vanek lead the NHL in PIMS?
Neil Blair, yeah. five for loafing. Excellent band name.
I can't stand to bake. all right, everybody. Listen, enjoy a game four tonight. We've got the Rangers. We've got the Kings. We've got the potential to see one of the greatest moments in all of professional sports. No, not the handshake line. The thing that came after it. The raising of Lord Stanley's Holy Grail above the heads of the most deserving team in the National Hockey League, the team that wins it. And it'll be fun to see. It'll be fun to see that. It'll be fun to see who wins the Conn Smythe if there is one tonight. And it'll be fun to see the mad dash of sports writers to Expedia and various travel sites as Henrik
Cancel
Lundqvist shuts out the Kings. So we'll swing back to L.A.
Are you going to wait till the last possible minute to book your flight?
Yep.
You are, right?
Yep. Totally.
No worries that you won't be able to get a flight and get there as quickly
as you would like? Oh, I think there'll be plenty of opportunities to get a flight for sure. Just thought I might have to transfer 17 times.
I was going to say, stop over. So we're flying to Atlanta. That is the main, one of the main central hubs. And then from Atlanta, we're going exactly where, Greg?
We're going to go JFK to Atlanta to Tampa to Guadalajara. All the way up to Glendale or Phoenix and then on to Los Angeles.
All right, very good. Make it there for the third period of Game 5. That's great.
There you go. Oh, I can make it there for the third period of Game 5 if I hop in a car. Greg Wyshynski's cross-country trailblazing tour on the way to Game 5 because there's no flights.
You and Sean Leahy in one of these like psychedelic Allen Ginsberg buses going to Game 5. Is that Timothy Leary? No, that's Sean Leahy.
How long do I have to keep driving the bus?
You are the guy who drives the bus, Leahy. I'm the guy who sits in the back and drinks beer.
It's not fair. It's been 23 hours.
Okay, well, listen. There's trail mix. You get the trail,
mix. That's right. And there's that little bowl there with all the green things in them. In there, eat them.
I'm really tired. I don't think I can keep.
Here, just sniff this. Act like a trucker, goddammit.
My wheel's turning into a snake. Strive.
All right. We'll talk to you.
Like we've never been there before. Yeah.
I was gonna say win or lose. We'll talk to you tomorrow. But I don't know. I mean, it really depends on my travel situation. But we'll do our best.
Good point. Yeah.
So think of the podcast. Think of my daughter, and send good vibes to your Los Angeles Kings tonight.
Donuts with Daddy.
Get the brooms out. Yeah. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. Talk to you soon. Bye.